skincare and relaxation experiences featuring four beautifully designed treatment rooms staffed with professional estheticians dedicated to exceptional care, personalized treatments and results-driven skincare, and specializing in luxury facials, body treatments, massage, and advanced skin therapies using premium products. Follow at Skin Fusion Kingston on Instagram for news and offers, and book online at skinfusion.ca or call 613-541-0111.
Hello, this is Christina Laurie, CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative news reporter. Does local news matter to you? CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st, and you can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC raise $25,000 this year and make your gift today via CFRC.ca. Don't forget to tune in for daily news programming and subscribe to our news podcast to keep up with the latest in your community.
And good afternoon. It is about a minute after 4 o'clock, and thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And in case I didn't mention it, this is Finding a Voice. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And in the first hour of coming up on the show today, from the first round of the November 4th and the Journey Continues open mic at the Elm Cafe in that monthly series, you'll hear readings by Malcolm Nolan, Connor Park, Taylor Davies, River, Laylee Jamali, Bruce Cudmore, Sonali Samaya, Chris Carney, Michael Flaho, Clark Reno, Bob Young, Liz Huntley Jens, Callista Markatich, Alana Veach, Joseph Elliott, Meg Freer, Leo Roberts, Fiona McMillan, Paige Chisolo, Eric Folsom, and me. And in the second hour coming up from the second round in that event at the Elm Cafe, you'll hear readings by Irfan, Nicholas Lennox, Malcolm Nolan, River, Laylee Jamali, Bruce Cudmore, Sonali Samaya, Michael Flaho, Clark Renault, Bob Young, Liz Huntley, Jens, Callista Markatich, Joseph Elliott, Meg Freer, Leo Roberts, Eric Folsom, and again me. Just my first mention that I do at the start of the show every hour is that both hours of this show are may contain some, either I should just say this show may contain either some poetry, spoken word, or music played that may have strong language, but all is played in its entirety to honor the integrity of both the author and the piece. Also, a mention you kind of heard already, CFRC is currently in about the middle of our 2025 funding drive that runs from November 1st to December 31st, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to play a quick promo here, and then we'll be right back.
CFRC 101.9 FM has launched its annual funding drive to raise $25,000 to support station operations, news and creative programming, and upgrades to our recording and performance studios. You can make a difference. Visit CFRC.ca right now and make your gift. Get a tax receipt or sweet, sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. Thank you for your support.
And I hope you can help out. Go to the website, www.cfrc.ca. Look on the donate page, and they have all the information there. Let's go ahead and jump into the first round. And I do announce everybody, so I'm just going to go ahead and just bring it up. Here we go. And first up this evening, again, is Malcolm Nolan. Let's bring him up.
Thank you. The first one I'm going to read tonight is my newest. It's called Haunting Highway. Smoldering Saratoga cigarette clamped and white knuckles on the wheel, forcing the needle into the 90s in disrespectful spite of the hammering rain. Half-drained Mickey of Weiser's Deluxe riding shotgun. Rosary on the rear view swaying to the sermon in my speakers. An exorcism performed on me by Padre Downey. A sibilant seance whispers from my radials. A reminder that you can never drink rye straight. It always comes pre-mixed with ghosts and demons. Evil spirits, if you'll pardon the play on words. The upshot is that you'll never drink alone. Spiritual Stockholm Syndrome. I see mournful faces and the blurring streaks of raindrops between the beats of my wipers. She's the choir master at the center of them, a halo of windswept raven locks, flitting furiously around her sepulchre marble pale face. The saccharine song of shattering glass beckons me through the windshield as I plunge into her oblivion, weightless, amongst sparkling crystalline razor stars. Thank you.
Let's give Malcolm another hand. Let's bring up Connor Park.
Hello, everybody. My name's Connor. I was looking for a passage to share with you guys this evening, and I was reading through my book, and I must have had it here one of the times I was here because I found this little scribbled note embedded in the passage I was thinking about reading tonight, and it says, "Happiness is something you do." Eric Folsom. And I read that and it brought a smile to my face, and I realized that being here in this place and experiencing your words, experiencing your experiences through your word, through your spoken word, and through your art, it means a lot to me, and your words matter a lot to me. And happiness is something you do, and tonight you are all doing something for me, and you're bringing me a lot of happiness, and I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
As we give Connor another hand, let's bring up Taylor Davies.
Hello. So I've been coming here for probably like a year and a half, I think. It's been a while, and I've never read before. And then I missed the past 2 months, just conflicts and stuff. And so I'm going to read, because I miss being here so much. And like you just said, the community is so special here, and I really missed being around it and being a part of it even a little bit. So that kind of pushed me to finally read. I don't know what to call my poetry. I've never really known. They're kind of observations that I write sometimes every day, sometimes once a week. And I've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now. So I kind of took a couple from earlier this year, and I was going to read a handful. So January 11th, I'm standing by the lake. It's cold and calm, no breeze and no sun. All the wind turbines but one are standing still on the island. The gentle sound of the waves on the rocks reminds me of music, but I can't place the song. March 27th, the young boy next door is practicing hockey shots in our shared backyard, a steady set of 3 thwacks at a time, then silence as he sets the pucks back up in a line, then 3 more thwacks. I peek out the window next to my cat and see our other neighbor's dog gnawing on a stick woven into the fence while it watches the kid with the cat and I. April 14th. Murmurations over the violet landfill. Turkey vultures roost on giant old stumps piled haphazardly. A lone crow picks through a dried cornfield. June 1st. Lilac and honeysuckle, weighted down by the full bloom heaviness of late spring, lean over a fence along Taylor Kidd like nosy neighbors eyeing the traffic. And I'll stop there.
So give Taylor another hand. Let's bring up River.
That's what you call a grand entrance.
Bless you.
Thank you.
So for this one, I've essentially done like three different rough drafts and still haven't found out a name. So very much taking suggestions if anybody has any ideas. Many of us are familiar with the story of the two wolves inside you. Have you ever wondered why this binary exists? They want you to believe it's naturally occurring. Basic biology. But when a wolf gives birth, the litter is on average 4 to 6 pups at a time. Of my litter, excluding me, none survived. They gave the wrong response. They were the wrong response. But we must protect the children. So the wrong responses were made a crime, and that crime was punishable by death. The pups who bite back were called violent, devoured. The pups who took flight didn't last much longer. Their tiny legs and low stamina were called a deformity, eradicated. The pups who froze lasted longer, but not much longer. As soon as their tail twitched out of bounds, exterminated. Wolves howl in cruel laughter. They have successfully eliminated all the pups who could not, would not, or wanted not to conform. Conformity is the cost of survival that I paid. The snarls of the wolves who raised me echo in my mind. Their critiques were targets that became threats. Bearded lady, delusional, too far, selfish. Chia pet, dyke, demanding, selfish. Confused, dangerous, bossy, selfish. Don't be difficult, be easy to love. Serve them better, do what he says, give her what she wants. Be labeled, filed, defiled, and identified. I went from selfish to selfless. No sense of self left. I am the father's daughter, the abuser's victim, the captor's treasure. I am whoever you need me to be, but I survived. But now I've also escaped, and I've learned the responses that my brothers gave their life to teach me. I can bite and run and freeze. I have gnarled the bones of my enemies. I have leaped unknown lengths, and I have reflected on hard lessons. And yes, I fawn, I dazzle, and I please, but only when necessary. I know how to fight and flight and freeze and fawn. I no longer concern myself with ensuring my survival is palatable to those who would see me exterminated. But to all of you here today, I beg you, consider your own survival. What did it cost you? What parts of yourself did you exterminate, extinguish, or otherwise eradicate? And how much longer will those who have to fawn make sacrifices in the name of the father, the abuser, and the holy captor? Thank you.
As we give River another hand, let's bring up Laylee.
Thank you and good evening, everybody. Today we are just talking about learning from the others, so the word that I picked from you was the hard-earned, hard-learned, and that stuff. So for me, immigration was tough, but I thought I would survive. But now I am experiencing some new stuff that I never did. Some call it depression. I don't want to. But I just try to write things down when they come to me, just to address it, just to find it, just to understand it. And these two things that I'm reading tonight are a part of the series that I am putting up together to understand myself. This one is called Awakening. In the quiet of the night, finally, the last light goes down, and I rest my head on the softness of welcoming feathers, wrapping my arms around myself dearly, trying to blanket some warmth around my shivering body, and stay still to let the mattress suck me in and make me weightless. Eyelids fall shut, I bury my ear into the veiled gateway, gently yielding on my heavy head, listening deep down into the void, hoping that someone will take heed and let me through. I am now sure that there is an ocean at the other side of my pillow. Every night I hear its wrestling waves, crushing on the lines of my earlobes, smelling the shades of its empty shells that fill the clamped caves of my nostrils, tasting the shards of the shattering salt that sink into the cracks of my chapping lips. I now know for certain that there's an ocean at the other side of my pillow, a vast and unfathomable watery plain that the silent streams of my endless tears must have joined to build over the years, patiently piercing their way, drop after drop, through the knitted layers of the hefty fabric case, running past the embracing patterns of white and yellow daffodils, dancing over the forested wings of some immortal swans, striving to make it to the other end, chasing a lucid dream in search of a whisperer who would be waiting at the other shore to finally call these tears back and hug me warm for real. Thank you.
As we give Laylee another hand, let's bring up Bruce Cudmore.
Hello. I've got a poem here called The Bellows. It's a kind of recent poem. I was just feeling a little, helpless over the goings-on in the world lately, but went for a walk, and this is the result, called The Bellows. Pining for a hurting world, I went for a walk on a warm late September day and heard an accordion playing You Are My Sunshine, as if it were relishing every last breath of summer air before fall. Me, now walking away, she played Give Me Oil in My Lamp and flooded me in effulgent nostalgia and the realization now that I hear those Sunday school songs so differently, so distantly. Becoming aware that that flame still burns and must burn, refracted through prismatic panes. Though the song fades as I walk, I catch flickering licks of it on the wind, and it becomes a fire in my head. And fed by the bellows of that instrument keeps me burning, gives me oil in my lamp, and keeps me burning, burning, burning. Keeps me burning for this imminently broken day.
Give Bruce another hand. Let's bring up Sonali Samaya.
I don't have a long intro for mine. It's just another sad one. Sue me. I fear plenty. I tremble at simple conversation and shake at flirtatious remarks. I fear more of the good than the bad. I can write about the comforts I've cultivated amidst chaos and scream about the irrational abandonment that I've internalized, and very little will change. I'm still afraid of your absence. This fear has infected every man, friend, and lover that has taken a seat next to me. This fear is continuous. It is a relationship that has only blossomed over time, one that has molded and manipulated me to take space that was never mine to shape into, a fear of emptiness, a fear of the very same thing that I am made up of. Thank you.
As we give Sonali another hand, let's bring up Chris Carney.
Hello. Oh, hello. Wow, it seems like it doesn't matter how many times I do this, my heart is always like beating out of my chest. This poem is a long time in the making. I guess that's all I really will say. Intercepted dispatch between neural headquarters and His Majesty's Spinal Regiment, 0400 local. Late last night, there was a breach in the long-held ceasefire between nihilism and my soul. It scaled the city walls, snuck past sleeping guards in narrow streets, right up to my bedroom door. Disguised as cerebral fluid, it seeped through a crack and woke me with a tender kiss. In a flash, a kaleidoscope of humanity shocks my senses. Rush of pure pleasure, sun beating my skin, cold grapes bursting on the tongue. Cold grapes bursting on the tongue. Why are they so sour? The air in here is thick with salty sweat and some metallic tang. And who is that man? Hairy hunchback, sparkling sweat. He beats on something I cannot see, and yet I know. There stands the first man, as he bludgeons the very last Neanderthal with his hammer. Crimson blood sprays the air, and in its refracted light, another flash. Mouth agape in awe, the human form dances a graceful capoeira under watchful eye, as my head fills with verse from a soldier besieged. A break in my trance comes from the sound of rhythmic chorus, a black crow's caw circling the lifeless ape at my feet. The air has become unbearable in here. There is a rot, and I've sussed its source. The meaningless fluid inside of me, gone in one violent retch. I keel over and purge black bile, slick like oil, from every orifice. Oh, how it plagued me so. Hairy hunchback, sparkling sobs, I gaze on something I can't quite make out. An ink blot of blood, guts, gore, and that sweet crude oil. Is it the rabbit king the dirt, or a stranger at my door? Maybe it's just me, sprayed across the floor. I see violence in the name of some god. I see love in the name of some god. Man finds meaning. Man finds meaning. Stay right where you are, deceptive dark elixir. I fear no longer and war no further. You deserve a hero's death. Thank you.
Give Chris another hand. Let's bring up Michael Flaho.
I'm getting to know Webster's rhyming dictionary really well. This is called A Love Poem from One Cat to Another. Your eyes are knives that hunt straight into mine. We circle, measuring the line of strength, intent, claw, and fur, each a mirror of the other, made of sense and sometimes purr. Our minds touch through sight. We are both alive, alert, feline. I see in you your tight restraint, the patient skill, the neutral saint of stillness, waiting for the twitch that breaks the blur so still, the switch to move without restraint. Our stares seek answers beneath the skin. No questions, just the wild within. No words, no pact, just scent and stare. The test of curls of mating air. Full circles pull to where a new pulse begins. When flank meets flank, we fill our role, two halves of one eternal soul. No priest, no vow, but just this thing that circles us like lightning, a ring older than what a human jeweled finger holds. When we part again, a silence stays. It nurtures knowledge older than our days. In others of us, I feel your flame. The same deep sight, wild, untamed. And through this, the world rolls towards our steady gaze. Voila.
As we give Michael another hand, let's bring up Clark. Is it Renard?
Renault.
Okay.
It's my first time being here, so thanks very much. This one's called Changing Colors. Chains hold us tight, cold winds carry the night. Lonely and wanting to feel alive, open waters and Hail Marys, jump blindly and dive. What do the signs mean, significance in the color green? Seasons change, hearts grow older, birds sing less in the month of October. Gray in the skies, wear it on your sleeve. Orange rays in the aftermath, yellow bursts onto the leaves. Alone in your thoughts, where do you go to escape your head? Step outside and see the leaves change from green to yellow to red. Like waiting on broken glass, the longer you stand, more blood spills. Like following the leaf down the stream or rolling the rock up the hill. Stuck in silence, molded by madness, your life is all but in front of you. It's in your head, leave your cold bed. What a day to wear the color blue. The journey beats the destination. The act of flourishing is deep and honest. Flows like the creek in your backyard, a firm hold like the Messiah upon crosses. Reality hits hard, but aim for the highest. Continue to seek, continue to grow. When one pushes the limits, one breaks the barriers. With constant flourishing comes white light, bright as snow. The end is near, grab it before it's too late. Your life is all but in front of you. The gods look down in utter joy. What a day to wear the color blue.
As we give Clark another hand, let's bring up Bob Young.
Hi, yeah, so I'm an interloper. I don't write poetry, but I write songs, and I sing songs. So I can't quite decide which to read. I guess I will read one of my own. So yeah, this is a song, but I'm reading it as a poem. Okay, it's called Her Hunger Was a Wolf, and I was inspired by news about last year about this 17 or 18-year-old young woman in Regina who I think committed suicide. She'd been sort of fallen through the cracks of the social like the shelter system in Regina. So there's more to it than that, but anyway, that's what the inspiration was. Okay, so here is Her Hunger Was a Wolf. Okay. Courageous in the concrete forest, she skated in a North Face hoodie, a guide to cubs playing hooky, steering them with skill and beauty, hunting some wisdom wide, preyed on when the chase got moody. She needed survival guides when stalking her thoughts got spooky. Her hunger was a wolf, chasing shelter, snarling at false helpers, howling at the truth. Her hunger was a wolf. Outrunning her fragile safety, the street shelter pawed at her shadows. Some even called her crazy. Her room was all rumpled bedclothes. Then it goes back to the chorus. Her hunger was a wolf, chasing shelter, snarling at false helpers, howling at the truth. Her hunger was a wolf. No way out, said her door sign, as she howled at the, as she howled on the floor. When life wasn't Barbie, but a coal mine, she tracked our trail. She tracked our trail. She tracked our trail of locked doors. Her hunger was a wolf, chasing shelter, snarling at false helpers, howling at the truth. Her hunger was a wolf. Thank you.
To give Bob another hand, let's bring up Liz Huntley Yinch.
So this one is a bit gruesome, I'm sorry. Also, the title is very long. It's called Nap When the Baby Naps, They Say, But When the Baby Naps, You Go Out to the Barn. At first, the chickens rush to greet you at the door. Until now, they have known you only as the harbinger of grain. But as their numbers dwindle and you return again and again, gathering up a bird in the crook of your arm each time, they grow weary and retreat to the far corners of the coop. You must be quick and sure in your movements then, as you snatch up another soft body. The chicken is calm but conscious when hung upside down, its russet head peeking from the bottom of the comb. It fixes you in its gold-green eye as you gently stretch its neck and draw the blade. All summer, it has hardly rained, and the old dug well out by the barn has long run out. It is late October, and you have never known the barnyard to be this crackling dry so deep into autumn. And where there had always been two small ponds tucked into the tree line, now there are nothing but empty cups gathering up the fallen leaves. Even the ticks, which had become so abundant these past years, have retreated from this drought. It is late October, and the trees and the great cloudless sky are aflame in red and gold and the purest blue, everything pierced through with sunshine and dying. While your baby naps, you butcher the season's chickens. You want to live honestly in this world. When you slit the chicken's throat, you must look it in the eye with the same brutal courage you will need when you look into your children's open faces and tell them, I'm sorry I brought you into this withering world. When the chicken has bled out, you drop it in the plucker, which rattles like an old washing machine, lined with rubber fingers that tear the feathers from the bird as it spins round and round. And when it is finally naked, headless, and holy, you take it up by the legs and carry it to the butchering table where your husband will gut it while the yellow eye of the sun looks on. Your husband's face is lightly splattered in blood, as you know yours must also be. It is late October, and like everything alive, you are equal parts love and regret, hope and despair, and the chicken's limp feet in your hand are exactly the size and weight of a baby's fist.
As we give Liz another hand, let's bring up Calista Markotich.
Hi. That was good, Liz. This prompt was a prompt that came at Writers' Fest. I went to a little workshop by Ian Williams, and this is a very good prompt if you're looking for something to write. He said to write about the death of a celebrity, someone that you admired. It didn't matter who it was, but it affected you because you admired that person. And then he asked you to think about that, think about what you thought, what you felt, maybe where you were. And then in this prompt, he said that near the end, just before you end, think about the death of someone close to you. And write a, I think he said maybe four lines about that. So it gives you a nice turn. Well, I did that, and so did some other people, and they were quite good on the first draft. This one's been worked on, and I don't have the turn, but it was Margaret Lawrence. And I'm sure there are people here who were not born when she died. She lived from 1926 to 1987, but she was one of Canada's foremost novelists at a time when, well, she's, you know, predated Margaret Atwood, but some of their works were at the same time. And it was the beginning of some really good novelists that were Canadian, and it was something kind of special, and I did admire her. So this is my poem. Reminiscing to Margaret Lawrence, 1926 to 1987. It was bedtime when I heard you died, too late for vodkas and oddnesses and idle gossip pulp collaged upon your metal. And just so you know, Margaret, nothing would cover Hagar, the woman you laid bare for us. She didn't prevaricate, proud, punished, paid full price. She came to us, stone angel, at a quickening time for women. Oh, no guarantee we would one and all step boldly into shit-covered boots to flee our patrimony, or hug the parts of us obliged to take the cudgels to ourselves. In 1965, I pinned on my coat a Christmas corsage and wore it, guileless, to a speakeasy in Detroit. In that funk, I saw it clear, the sideways smirk, the little leer, and I disowned that version of myself as if a pin was all it took for me to become mine enemy. The night you died, my face rinsed inky with mascara through which I blink at the world each day. What can I do but own myself? I go to Hagar, whose private confessions wept for the ghosts of the women she'd been, women who gave not a fig for fitting in, women of adamantine. Who wouldn't visit the altars of women like that? Gray water in the gleaming sink whirlpooled down the drain and flowed into murky passages below. You never cared for pleasers, Margaret, yet here I am with lilies in my hand. That night I flossed and brushed and thought how it was late, how you'd get your lauds in the morning media. Our own Canadian woman novelist. While I slept, our junior hockey team spilled from the bench, angry surge of red and white to brawl like thugs in a foreign rink. The morning news was full of that, for who can resist the clatter of boys' hockey sticks hitting ice, the clack of brave white helmets thrown down.
As we give Callista another hand, let's bring up Alana Beach.
Hi, everyone. It's been a few months since I've been here, and I confess that I haven't read this one aloud in a while. But I'm excited to share it because it was included in the latest issue of the Skeleton Press, which is the local neighborhood newspaper. Yeah, so I'm sorry. I'm just feeling really proud of myself, and I'm so thankful for the press and for Sadiqa Demeyer, for her mentorship. The theme was neighborhood food. Ways of tending to a community garden. I can see the community garden from the window of my apartment. I watch tenders care for their seedlings as mother hens tend their young. The garden is much smaller than I'd imagined. How do we feed an entire community with a few feet of fertilized soil? This garden must give a lot. I reflect on community as a public where life is to flourish, a place of gathering, of connecting, a feeling of shared ownership and responsibility. But there isn't always room in the garden. We had raspberry bushes when I was younger. Saskatoon bushes, too, established long before we moved onto the farm. I don't see any berry bushes here. A block over, a neighbor I haven't met has rows of vine tomatoes. I wonder whether any go missing, whether anyone braves the chicken wire. There must be a hen there. About a year ago, I witnessed a man break a branch for giving too much shade to his plot. I wonder whether the seedlings did better. The tree has never been the same. This year, a seedling found its way into a crack in the driveway. It buried itself just enough to sprout a vine green with promises. I wait for the community market, the gathering of neighborhood harvests. Remember bushes of berries in the backyard. Moose would tend the pruning. And through the window of my apartment, I watch, dream of strawberry rhubarb crumble, of iced cream, blushing of raspberries we foraged in the backyard.
As we give Alana another hand, let's bring up Joseph Elliott.
I'll be reading a haiku, which are typically read twice because they're so short. So I'm going to do that. Pulling on her shoes, still not quite sure where Grandma went. Pulling on her shoes, still not quite sure where Grandma went.
So we give Joseph another hand. Let's bring up Meg Freer.
Hello. I've got my monthly plug for Quirks of Human Nature. If you haven't been there, it's poetry performed with live improvised music. Many of you have either been featured poets or bonus poets there and can confirm that it's a really fun evening. We've got Sarah Tiang as the featured poet in November 18th. It's a Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9:30 at Timeout Bar and Bistro, which is the corner of Johnson and Ontario Street. We've got Michael Castiles on guitar. He's often here. He's not here now. Jeb Sherman's on piano. And we have Wes Rickert, if you've never seen him, he's a spoken word artist from Lansdowne, and he's quite something else. So hope you can join us November 18th. I'll put the poster up there after. Dark days. November is the month of remembrance, generally. Just a time of year when people's thoughts turn to those who've passed on. So anyway, this is called Dark Days. Constant muttering inside your head bullies you with doubts until you can't remember when your goals seemed attainable. Existence seems pointless, though you know you've helped many others through rough days. Your primal wish, every parent's wish, has never been simple to ensure that your children have reasons to wake up every day. You know where and when freight trains pass. You could choose fickle daylight or sincere darkness to park your old truck at the crossing. Your children wouldn't have wanted the truck anyway. But for the rest of their lives, they will wonder how it feels to be shoved along the tracks with the end in sight. Thank you.
So give Meg another hand. Let's bring up Leo Roberts.
Sorry, Alana. All right. Guys, I'm so sick of the moon. Mostly about writing about it. Anyways, so I saw a cloud during my lunch break today, and I thought, okay, I'll write you this time. So this is my poem about clouds and not the moon. Oops, I keep falling for the moon. Cold stone, gentle glow, never leaves, never mine. You've heard the story before. Could I love a cloud instead, with a silver lining in sight? Still out of reach, sure, but then comes the rain. For once I'd yearn for something soft. For once I'd yearn, and it would go away.
So we give Leo another hand. Let's bring up Fiona McMillan.
Hello, everyone. I have been thinking a lot about... I usually don't talk before I read one, but I was having a thought today, and I was thinking that I'd like to talk about it. When I started writing, and I'm assuming that this is a relatable thing for a lot of people in this room, it was usually when I was really struggling and having a hard time, and it made me kind of have this interesting relationship with writing, where now, as time has gone by and I'm not struggling as much, I'll find myself writing poems about things that I think old me, high school me, would find very silly, like trips to the grocery store or who my friends are dating and not dating and small inconveniences I had during the day. And recently I've been writing a lot about romantic relationships, and there's been this voice in my head that's been getting very upset with myself and kind of calling them fluff and thinking they're silly and that love poems are so overdone. But I was thinking today that I think it's kind of like a huge gift to be able to write about small, silly things and to not every time I sit down at my computer or my notepad have to bear the weight of the world, but instead just write something kind of light. And I was really excited about that. So with that being said, I'm going to be reading something about dating. And yeah, and I don't think it's silly anymore, which is very exciting. But this one doesn't have a title, and it's a bit long. All right. The longer I spend not thinking about who I am going to marry, the better my writing gets. I wish this fact was not true because I like the thought of being both accomplished and adored, but it's looking further and further away from a possibility these days. The longer I spend not thinking about who I'm going to marry, the better my writing gets. My paintings have gotten better too, but that could just be a product of all the hard work I've been doing during my undergraduate degree in fine arts. It's easier to quantify and explain that one, so I cannot confirm or deny anything. But the writing one, that one is definite. The longer I spend not thinking about who I am going to marry, the better my luck at Value Village is. I know this one sounds cute and a bit facetious, but it's painfully accurate. When I'm not making plans to get drinks with strangers, I've found much more exciting blouses come my way. This is hard to really explain, but it is happening, and I feel that it would be shameful to deny it, especially in my writing. What I've learned from the past 4 years of my undergraduate degree, in brackets, 1.5 spent romantically locked away, one in purgatory, and one in my current state, is that having a romantic partner almost always makes you uglier and less interesting. I know this may be hard for some of you to hear. Bonus points if you brought a date tonight. I'm sure you thought that a distant friend's spoken word poetry reading would be the perfect chill location for that third meeting, that my words would really get the sexual chemistry flowing. I bet you thought I'd be talking about comparing a woman's eyes to red dahlias or the strangers I fall in love with on the subway right now. I bet you are regretting meeting me. But it would be rude and far too obvious if you left right now, because everyone in this room would know that you came for reasons solely existing beyond horniness. So you are going to stay. You're going to stay while I continue to talk your ear off. You're going to stay and congratulate me after the show. Tell me how it moved you. I know you fucking will, and I can't wait to look you in the eyes while you do it. Having a romantic partner makes you uglier and less interesting. This is almost always true. Thank you.
As we give Fiona another hand, help me out with your last name.
Giusolo.
Giusolo?
Yeah.
Paige Giusolo.
It's also my first time here. And honestly, probably one of my first times ever reading one of my poems out loud, so bear with me if I'm a little nervous. This is about a breakup with someone that I don't like anymore, so it's called Copycat. My vengeance sleeps in the cradle of patience and finds faith in inevitability. You tell tales of your newfound euphoria, though you neglect your thievery in the journey of your search. Because stolen from me was the fruit my branches bore for you to pick from. But greedy you were, so gluttonous you became. And now you make fruit salad for strangers with a recipe I gave to you. Therefore, not in love, but in grief, I will remember you, Copycat.
As we give Paige another hand, let's bring up Eric Folsom.
Thank you. My gosh, you guys are all so good. I can't believe it. I should believe it. I do. So I just want to take my turn promoting something. An evening with John Barton and Eric Folsom. John Barton is launching a new book. It's called Compulsory Figures, and I'll be the warm-up act. Novel idea, Thursday, November 13th, 7 p.m. Come out and fill the store, please, and I'll try to post this in the cafe. I didn't hear Callista's prompt, but I still wrote about a famous dead person. This is called Pink Chanel Suit, and that's what Jackie Kennedy wore on November 22nd, 1963, when JFK was shot. So, Pink Chanel Suit. The motorcade of time normally cruises past without detours from its dignified agenda, without rifle cracks or the steering wheel spinning, hitting the gas and blasting through intersections, minutes turning tactile. The hour is your dry throat. We scavenged scrap lumber as kids for our shelters, cockeyed and bent-nailed in the mildewed autumn woods, joinery loosened by gusty wind and dark rain. Our peepholes, little poems for sussing out strangers. No plan, of course, if and when we saw them coming. Where were you when you heard JFK had been shot? People asked. Real life mediating media. Ruptures rippling up the camera's pipeline. I was in my junior high school's assembly hall. A balcony painted blue, seventh grade, stage right. At center stage, the head of the student council got up to tell us the president had been shot, precipitating a quiet burst of laughter. I'm not kidding. It's true. This has really happened, convincing us through the heat of anxiety. The teachers dismissed us, and we shuffled homeward, kicking dead leaves in the gutters along the way. Then we heard the sober tones of Walter Cronkite explained that doctors had pronounced the president dead. Clarity of speech, plain pronunciation. Comics who satirized the Kennedy accent found out that evening their jokes were in poor taste. Instant shrines to Jack appeared on top of TVs, warmed by eternal picture tubes, keeping the faith, while think piece editorials hunted answers. And replays got replayed down through the years and decades. Black and white limos, black and white blood on that suit, Ruby's bullet and Oswald's black and white grimace. Plywood playhouses collapsing in the wind again. Always the world, never the same again. Never.
As we give Eric another hand, let's give Anthea, who's been taking very good care of us behind the bar tonight. And is there anyone here that wanted to read that didn't get a chance to read in the first round? I'm going to close it out with a poem then. This is called After Years, Then Decades. They called it something and said it would be more than an event, an occurrence. No, they said, there will be a reclamation, a reckoning, an ultimate answer to the damage done, not more questions. I'm more old than young, than even midlife, and I believe this reckoning will take a very long time to even ferment and then develop. I'll remain cautious. I will be here, or in believing I will see the light after. But even if that can't or doesn't happen, I am already and will still indeed wonder and imagine in great detail what it will become. And I can promise you that if the lines are indeed open, I will call you from the other side. Thanks.
And you just heard from the first round of the November 4th and the Journey Continues open mic at the Yam Cafe. Readings by Malcolm Nolan, Connor Park, Taylor Davies, River, Layli Jamali, Bruce Cudmore, Sonali Samaya, Chris Carney, Michael Flaho, Clark Renault, Bob Young, Liz Huntley-Jansk, Callista Markotich, Alana Veach, Joseph Elliott, Meg Freer, Leo Roberts, Fiona McMillan, Paige Chisolo, Eric Folsom, and me.
You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. It is about 59 minutes after 4 o'clock. I hope you can stay tuned for the second round of readings in that evening. In the next hour, I'll also have some time for some announcements and a bit of music to close the show out today. First of all, I'd like to thank you for having tuned in to this first hour of the show today. Again, hope you can stay tuned to the second hour for more. I also would like to thank all of those who participated in the event that evening and those who came to support, and to our barista Anthea there, who took good care of us, and of course always to the Elm for being there. Quick